people assume that as a conservative, I don't acknowledge sexism, or I say there's no double standard or sexism doesn't exist. Well, that's certainly not where I am. There's certainly a double standard for women in this realm.
From Politico, this is Women Rule, where we bring you real talk with women bosses. I'm Anna Palmer, senior Washington correspondent and co-author of the Politico Playbook.
It's not just about what we say, it's about how we say it. If we get in a conflict on air, it's not just that it was heated, it was that it was a cat fight or she freaked out about something.
Today, we have an interview with Allie Beth Stuckey, who's part of the new vanguard of conservative media. Stuckey's a blogger, podcaster, and a host at Conservative Review TV, and she's only 26. Stuckey became a viral sensation recently when she published a parody interview video with Democratic candidate Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Alexandria, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Do you have any experience that qualifies you for this job?
I was growing up during the Clinton era. And then basically when I was in middle school, 9/11 happened.
But she's been a mainstay in conservative millennial circles since the 2016 election. Her blog and videos about faith and politics have racked up hundreds of thousands of followers and millions of views. We were really interested in asking her about all of that. Conservatism, millennials, and where women like her fit in the conversation. Stay tuned for our interview with Allie Stuckey. On the podcast, we'll be bringing you real talk with women bosses, asking how did you make it, and what advice would you give a woman looking to lead? If you're a fan of the show, please subscribe to Women Rule on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us and leave a review. And follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @apalmerdc. Also, make sure to check out our Women Rule candidate tracker on politico.com. We're tracking how well all the female candidates are doing in national races this year. Women Rule is produced by Politico in partnership with our founding partners, Google, and the Tory Burch Foundation. And now, our interview with Allie Stuckey. Allie, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. People have come to know you as the conservative millennial. You are a blogger, a podcaster, a regular on the Fox News circuit, and you're a host on Conservative Review TV. For those of our listeners who don't know too much about you, talk about your show, your podcasts, and your audience over at CRTV. I know you have a lot of millennials tuning in.
Yes. So the majority of my audience is high school, college, and then young 20-something. I approach cultural and political topics from a big picture and a biblical perspective. So I'm a Christian, and I am constantly working out how to intertwine my faith with what's going on in politics and culture. And so the goal of my podcast, the goal of my videos on CRTV is to kind of help navigate those same waters for my audience who is kind of trying to understand and grapple with the same thing.
How did you grow the audience? Or talk us about, tell me a little bit about how you got it started. I mean, not, a lot of people have podcasts, right? A lot of people have thoughts about what's happening in politics today. But, you know, kind of finding that moment that grows an audience is pretty hard.
So I got started back in 2015. I honestly can't tell you what made me have this revelation. I'm sure it was a lot of little moments that built up to this. But I was driving one day and I just remember calling my mom. I think it was the fall of 2015 and saying, "Mom, I feel like I need to help young people, people my age, people in college understand why they need to vote in the primaries." I had had some conversations with my friends where they had no idea who to vote for or why they should vote or why the primaries should even matter. So I decided to come up with this kind of presentation and go around to college sororities for free and tell them, hey, you should vote in the primaries. And at this point in 2015, I wasn't doing that from a conservative perspective. I was just doing that from a nonpartisan perspective. And I lived in a college town in Athens, Georgia. So I had UGA right at my disposal. So I just kind of had this desire, this idea to go around to these sorority girls, which is a group that, or just college girls in general, is kind of a group that I feel like I've always been able to reach, go to them and say, hey, here's why you should vote. Here's the importance of voting. And that kind of, I won't say it took off, but it did well. So my name started kind of getting passed around to other organizations on campus. And I thought, hey, I really like this. I'm getting a lot of energy from speaking in front of people about something that I'm passionate about. I had a full-time job as a publicist and a social media strategist at the time, so this was kind of just fun for me. And after a few months of speaking to college organizations about the importance of voting, I thought, okay, I wanna do a little bit more. And since I am a conservative and I see a lack of conservative values even on this Southern College campus, I wanna start a blog. And so I named it The Conservative Millennial, which is not very creative. It's just kind of what it was. I started this blog and I was creating flowcharts and guides just about conservative politics. And again, the primaries and the importance of voting. And kind of long story short, after a few months of writing blog posts, I started making videos down the same vein of just kind of explaining what was going on in the primaries. And it was kind of like all of a sudden that took off. My videos went from getting, you know, a few views to hundreds of thousands of views to millions of views to tens of millions of views in a matter of what felt like just a few months. I won't say overnight, but very quickly. And then living in Athens, my husband ended up getting a job in Dallas. And so we moved to Dallas. And then from there, the blog kind of launched into a full-blown media career. And now I work for a company called CRTV. That's where I have my podcast, my digital show. I still speak to college students on campus and to student organizations and to even corporations about engaging millennials. So it's kind of all happened over the past 3 years.
Talk to me about, you know, your background in politics, right? Your dad, a Republican state representative in Texas. Did that influence you becoming a conservative? When did you kind of know? Was there a moment growing up or in college where you kind of took that mantle on and that's where you knew kind of your political beliefs lied?
I wouldn't say that there was some moment because I didn't ever require kind of a political about face. I think a lot of young people, we hesitate saying, oh, our parents really influenced our views because we want it, you know, we want people to know that we think these things independently. But for me, I would say it's both and. Of course, I think these things independently, not because my parents have any authority over me, but they absolutely influenced the way that I think and they shaped the way that I think. Both of my parents were conservatives and then and Christians our entire life. You know, we always went to church, went to a Christian school. That absolutely influenced the way that I think. But we weren't always talking about politics in our household. It wasn't something that I was that, you know, I was constantly inundated with. But I do remember staying up all night, or what felt like all night, when I was, I think, in second grade for the Bush-Gore election. I remember that being, I think, 8, 9 years old, staying up all night and being obsessed over George Bush winning that election. And so I wouldn't say that it started then, but I would say that's kind of an indication that my whole life I've cared about what's going on civically. However, I was just speaking to Young Americans Foundation just the other day in DC, and I was telling them I didn't follow that passion or really allow myself to get involved in politics in high school or in college the way so many awesome young people do. I wish that I had. I don't really have a reason for why I didn't, except that maybe I was just apathetic and small-minded the way that a lot of young people are when they're growing up, just too concerned with my own life. But it really wasn't until, I would say, the Romney Obama election got me fired up about everything because I didn't like the way that the country was going and I was probably really paying attention for the first time. But it wasn't until this last election that I was finally so fed up with how things were going and how young people thought about politics and particularly progressivism that I said, okay, I kind of want to lend my voice to this whole thing. So I would say it's been a slow growing passion that kind of manifested itself just a few years ago.
Yeah, so talk to me about that. I mean, in terms of this kind of passion that grew for you, one of the big issues for Republicans right now is that they are, if you look at any polls, they're losing millennial voters, that a lot of young voters are turned off of where the politics are right now, in Trump's politics, on a lot of different issues. Is that an issue that you're surprised by, or is that something you're trying to turn around?
I'm not surprised by it because I know where millennials and young people get our information. And we could really go all the way back to like the baby boomers and how the baby boomers were raised, how the baby boomers raised us, the rise of individualized personal technology that kind of led to this mentality for young people that is that really is revolved around this idea of our own personal subjective truth, that what is true for me is true for me. What is true for you is true for you. There's really no objective morality or objective principles. And I think this idea that conservatism has, that is not necessarily a religious idea, but just this idea that truth does exist, that right and wrong are objective, that there is a universal morality, universal principles. We believe in the importance of institution, like family, churches, community in general, that I think doesn't really appeal to individualized millennials. And I think progressivism really does. Progressivism, this idea that, you know, your truth is your truth, your morality is your morality, do whatever you want. And to, well, I'm going to say this in a negative way that you might not agree with, and the state will take care of you. And it doesn't really matter what you do individually or individual responsibility. What matters is that you agree with our political ideology and your morality is yours. Conservatism really rejects that. And I think that that's difficult for millennials to really hold on to. And plus, I know exactly where we're getting our information. We get our information from academia, from social media, from the mainstream media, and from Hollywood. And all of those sources of information lean to the left.
Where do you get your news and information?
Well, I get my information from a lot of different places. I try to challenge my own biases, which obviously I have a conservative bias. And so as much as I like Fox News, I'm always reading CNN, Washington Post, New York Times, as well as Fox, Drudge Report, The Skim, all of that. I try to get my information from a wide range of perspectives. But what I try to tell young people is that it's not just where you get your news on a day-to-day basis. It's also what you are reading and the knowledge that you actually know behind the news. Because I think the what of news is much less important than the why it's happening and the context of which it's happening.
What do you think older conservatives can do to deal with this problem or to try to attract more millennials into their fold if they on their own aren't seeking out sources, like you say, if you see the problem being they're just not educated enough?
Well, I don't think it's older generation's responsibility, probably. I think like every generation, a lot of people try to say, oh, millennials, young people, they're the worst generation that has ever lived. And sure, some of the generalizations or some of the stereotypes that older generations or concerns that older generations have about millennials are probably true. We're kind of disconnected from reality. There is kind of this sense of entitlement. But every generation since the beginning of time has looked at the next generation and has said, oh my gosh, this is going to be the generation that ruins everything, which is why I think it's a job of young people like me. I think that I am able to relate to people in college probably a lot better than baby boomers can. Not that they don't have a role in all of this. I think they absolutely do. But this kind of feeling, particularly from conservative older people, that they are constantly disappointed in us, that we're constantly coming up short, that we're going to be the generation that ruins everything, that's really a turnoff. And if there's anything that the left does well, I think it's attract young people. They attract young people with stories, with empathy, with kind of emotionalism. And I don't mean that as a pejorative, but really capturing people's hearts and feeling. I think the left does a good job of saying, we're proud of young people. We want you to be involved. Come into the fold. We need you. You're the future. Whereas with conservative older people, it's like, please don't mess this up. That attitude is just, you know, I think a lot of young people don't want to be involved in that. And I get it.
Yeah, I can understand that. Tell me, one of the things I want to talk to you about is this podcast is about and for women. You know, who are very much in the public eye in politics, in media, in entertainment. And something, you know, we've seen on both sides of the aisle is the very loud public criticism that they end up receiving. I imagine you get a lot of that, especially as a young conservative woman. Talk to us about how you deal with that. Have there been any kind of particular stories that have been hurtful to you?
Yeah, I mean, particularly as a woman on the internet, like you said, I do get a lot of hate. And I think as a conservative, people assume that as a conservative, I don't acknowledge sexism, or I say there's no double standard or sexism doesn't exist. Well, that's certainly not where I am. I don't even know a lot of conservative women who would say that sexism doesn't exist. There's certainly a double standard for women in this realm, because it's not just about what we say, it's about how we say it. If we get in a conflict on air, it's not just that it was heated, it was that it was a cat fight or she freaked out about something. There, you know, are constantly evaluations about how we look, comparing us to other women, just because we might have the same hair color, or we might think the same. That is difficult. I think that's probably the most difficult thing. I don't like it when people compare me or compare any conservative woman to another conservative woman simply because we have the same views. And it's usually in a negative way. Of course, if it's a compliment like, oh, you remind me of this person that I really like, that's one thing. But, you know, you're just another blah, 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 or something like that. That really bothers me, seeing that not just for myself, but for other people, because I don't see that. I don't see that for men. I don't really see a bunch of men saying, oh, you're just a copycat of so-and-so. It's patronizing. I think that there's another level of condescension for women on the internet and a little bit more pressure for women to prove their originality, to prove how smart they are, to prove how consistent they are, than there is for men. And I definitely feel that. And one thing that I hate about being in this world a little bit is that I feel like sometimes as a conservative woman that we're not allowed to talk about that we're not allowed to talk about, hey, by the way, sexism does exist, and that is kind of sexist that I was just called that. I kind of feel like, oh no, you have to be in the camp that says, you know, sexism isn't real and you feel the exact same way as everyone else. That just kind of bothers me. I feel like everything that I think now sometimes has to be tainted by politics. And I don't like that. Some things just are. It doesn't have to be political. So I think that's been one of the most difficult parts about being in this role.
Do you get compared to Tommy Lahren or other kind of commentators like that?
I think I used to when I first started, because I worked at The Blaze and I was blonde and we both did videos. So I understood, but it's never been a compliment. It was never a compliment for me to be compared, but that hasn't happened in a really long time. But what I see is groupings of, like, you know, of certain conservatives of like, oh, you're all the same, or oh, you're just like so-and-so, you're a Trump shill, or you're just like this person on CNN because you're anti-Trump. I get both all of the time. You're either super pro-Trump or you're anti-Trump because I happen to fall on both sides. That it's more of a grouping than it is like direct comparisons that I experience now. Now, I do think, like you said, I did get comparisons in the very beginning, but I've worked really hard to kind of carve out my niche. I don't know any other conservative pundits or commentators that talk about theology and use satire in the way that I do. So I'm personally not really concerned with people comparing me to other people. I don't know anyone in the game that does the same thing that I do. But I think it's frustrating when people just clump you in with a whole group of people and they don't appreciate the nuance that you've added to the conversation.
I wanted to ask you about something that kind of threw you in the national spotlight recently, a fake parody interview you did editing together footage from a PBS interview with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the 28-year-old New Yorker who just won a primary against a top Democrat. You got a lot of flack for that. But you also had a ton of other people defending you and that parody video. Talk to me about why you think this video went viral and what happened with the really polarized response.
Well, I was very surprised that it went viral. I mean, I have a great editor and producer. He did a great job on it. So I knew that it was good. I mean, we worked hard on it. It took us a week to go back and forth to make sure that it was the right balance between parody, but also like, oh, this is making a legitimate point. I mean, I think that that is what constitutes as good satire, when you take something to the absurd, but it still makes a legitimate point about reality. And that's what it was. It wasn't supposed to be this hysterical ha 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 video, but a lot of people thought it was, and that's great. I knew that it would do well, but I didn't know that it would have that reaction. And even when I saw it racking up, you know, millions of views on Facebook, I had no idea the impact that it would have until I woke up the next day and I had a request for comment from Mediaite, from BuzzFeed, and that surprised me. Then it turned into this whole PR firestorm to where we were having to give comment left and right. And what I noticed, at least about a couple of the journalists, not certainly not all of the journalists, but a couple of the requests for comment came in with, you know, this is purposely deceptive, or a lot of people are saying this is purposely deceptive. Why wouldn't you label it satire? Or why would you do this when you know it could possibly purposely deceive? And I saw a lot of misreporting about, oh, Ali has never done videos like this, so it was very hard to tell whether this was satire. She didn't say it was satire. And I thought the reporting of it from a lot of people was completely unfair and just inaccurate. It was very obvious by the request for comment that, okay, these people have already established what their opinion is about this video. Rather than asking me why we made it or what our thought was behind it, it's more defend yourself because you purposely deceived people. I thought that that was manufactured outrage. I thought that that was extremely patronizing of journalists to basically write stories that said, oh, we get it because we're these really smart journalists, but most of the world doesn't understand that this is satire. So let me explain it to you. It surprised me. And it also just really disturbed me about the state of reporting and that a lot of people on the left just can't tolerate someone on the right making a joke, because the only humor now that is protected is humor that is against conservatives or against President Trump. If you say something bad about Trump, about the First Family, about conservatives, you can be as vulgar, as mean, as hateful as possible, and people are still going to laugh and it's going to be okay. But if you make a lighthearted, clean joke about someone on the left, then you are going to get dragged through the mud by the Washington Post. So that was an interesting double standard that I got to experience for myself. Even though I was making a legitimate point, I don't think that she knows very much about her own platform. It was actually supposed to be a softer way of making that point rather than coming out and saying, wow, this girl is just awful. Because I don't actually think that she's awful. It was just a way to say, to highlight, hey, maybe she needs to brush up a little bit about her own socialist agenda. And that's what I hope to do with other people on both sides of the aisle in the future. And the response, like you said, from most people, and if not everyone on the right, was really good. And I mean, that's my audience.
So talk about the midterms. Let's talk about politics right now. What races are you paying attention to? What do you think is going to happen in terms of Republicans and control of Congress?
I still think it's too difficult to tell whether we're going to have a red or a blue wave. I mean, I don't think there's going to be a red wave, but I also think that the blue wave is kind of turning out to look like a little bit of a ripple. So I think that it's going to be very difficult for Republicans to keep the House. As we know, that's very unlikely for the president's party to keep the House during an election year. I hope we control the Senate. Of course, I hope we control both chambers. I just think it's very going to be very difficult for Republicans to do that. But both parties have an opportunity to flip seats.
Well, it's certainly going to keep us busy, both of us, that's for sure.
Yes.
I want to ask you about women in the Republican Party. Are there certain members or even figures in the party that you personally are looking up to, or that you think are a mold of, you know, kind of what the future of the Republicans should be?
Nikki Haley, definitely. I think that she is someone that has really risen in her position as ambassador, as someone that not just young women look up to, but a lot of young conservatives look up to. I mean, she's kind of been a figurehead for a while in the Republican Party, but I think just seeing her strength and strength of character in her current position has been really inspiring for a lot of people, and particularly young conservative women. I mean, she's received a lot of criticism for what she does, and she seems to just be able to go forward and defend America with so much mental and moral and emotional fortitude. And I think that's what a lot of young women want to see and want to be ourselves, someone who is able to withstand the storms of politics and retain her integrity. And so far, she's been able to do that. There's been a lot of calls for Nikki Haley to be president, at least among young conservatives. I certainly wouldn't be mad about that. But I think that she's an amazing person to look up to. I also think, and she's not necessarily, I mean, she's not a Republican figurehead. And I know that I'll get a lot of pushback on this because I know that the left really, you know, has certain feelings about her. But I actually think that Sarah Sanders is doing a great job with what she has. I mean, if we're all honest, she's given a really, really difficult task of defending Donald Trump and speaking for Donald Trump. I think that she is doing an excellent job with the tools that she's been given, which aren't a whole lot of tools. So she's just someone that I admire for never backing down and for being strong. And that's something that a lot of conservatives are really realizing right now, is that you can't constantly be apologizing for your conservative views because the left tells you that you're a bigot. And it's those women that are standing up and saying, no, I'm not apologizing for being confident in what I believe in. I'm not apologizing for being a conservative. I'm not apologizing for having conservative values. I'm proud of those things. I think it's those kind of women that young conservatives are really cheering on and looking up to.
So will there be an Ally Stuckey for public office in the future? Should we be looking for your tagline or your bumper sticker sometime soon?
Oh, gosh. Definitely not sometime soon. I don't think so. I've always said that being actually in politics doesn't really appeal to me. I mean, I don't consider myself some kind of policy expert, and that's why I don't focus on policy specifically within my podcast. I really talk big picture of how our policies fit into culture and fit into Christianity as well. And I like being able to have that influence and that flexibility in the scope of what I talk about. And I like being able to have that kind of I want to say one-on-one access. It's not really one-on-one access with my audience, but it's a feeling that it is. I like having that relatability. I'm afraid that I would lose that in public office, but hey, I don't know. I'm only 26. Maybe in 25 years, running for public office will be something that appeals to me. Who knows? Who knows? Things change around here in a matter of like 2 months. So who am I to predict what's going to happen in 20 years?
All right, Ally. Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Women Rule is produced by Rena Flores. Dave Shaw is our executive producer, and our booker is Jessica Andrews. If you're a fan of the show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave a review. It helps new listeners find the show. And one last thing, if you have any thoughts about who we should feature on Women Rule, let me know. Tweet me at @apalmerdc. And of course, hit that subscribe button. And thanks for listening.